It is 8:09 in the Twin Cities, 49 degrees. Time now for one of my absolute favorite guests, Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How about you this evening?
Very well indeed. So much, as always, to talk about. The election 3 weeks away from Tuesday,
yes.
Which is just extraordinary. And just with the volume of ads that are inundating our airwaves, I think a lot of people are ready for it to come and be over. But I do want to ask you about something that we've been talking about this evening. I did have on for an extended interview, Dean Phillips, in the 7 o'clock hour. He is, of course, the Democratic nominee for the 3rd Congressional District. And in a couple of weeks, we are going to have an extended interview with his opponent, the incumbent Congressman, Republican Eric Paulson, on this very show. I don't have a specific time, but we did have Congressman Paulson call in really just a few minutes ago, around 7:35. And he was strongly defending an ad that is running. It is his own ad. It is criticizing Dean Phillips for his role when Dean Phillips was chair of the Allina board, Allina Hospitals board, saying that the board members, including Phillips, ignored a case of sexual harassment when Allina was sued about 11 years ago. One of the things that has come up since this ad began airing was that Bill George, who is also a former Allina board member and is the former CEO of Medtronic and is a professor at Harvard Business School, was sharply critical of Eric Paulson for running this ad and for attacking board members, saying it was, quote, beyond the pale. Also criticizing this ad was Lori Peterson, who was the attorney who represented the women who sued Allina. She said in an email to me and I think to the Associated Press and to some other news outlets that Dean Phillips had nothing to do with this. And she wrote to me that she felt that Eric Paulson in this ad, which attacks Dean Phillips, that she was using, that Paulson was using her clients as props for political gain. I want to ask you, first of all, how unusual is it to have third parties who are fairly prominent in their own rights come out and sharply criticize a political ad like this?
Rarely do you see that, with the exception of course, let us say when the media does truth tests. You know, we'll bracket those off to the side, like, you know, Pat Kessler, right. You know, has been doing things like that. But bracketing aside the media, you rarely see that because people really don't want to get dragged into partisan battles if they're nonpartisan. And again, it just becomes highly, highly unusual to do something like that. And somebody like Bill George, who really had a stellar reputation at Medtronic, and I know him, and he's probably, when I say he's apolitical, I don't want to say he doesn't care about politics, but he's very, very nonpartisan. And for him to come out is pretty significant. And again, also, I think for Lori Peterson, who I happen to know also, for her to come out and say that that this was an unfair ad, yet again, is very unusual. So the wordy answer is highly unusual to do this.
All right. Is this all inside baseball? I mean, somebody like me, you know, can follow this kind of thing. Somebody like you can follow it. But does this have any consequences? Because I agree with you. I think it's very unusual. I mean, I'm just trying to think of when this has happened, when you've had two prominent people, you know, Bill George saying, hey, this taints anybody who was on the Allina board with a broad brush. This is not caring about this issue, which we do care about. And then to have the attorney for the victims come out and criticize Paulson. I think that's even more damaging, frankly, to Mr. Paulson. But is this inside baseball? Congressman Paulson was on earlier within the past 45 minutes, strongly defending the ad. And saying, you know, listen, Dean Phillips is saying that, hey, he was, you know, on the Allina board and he's using this as, you know, part of his credentials. He's basically doubling down as Congressman Paulson. I mean, does this have any kind of an impact on this race, do you think?
Well, I'm going to make two comments here. One is that in a very in what looks like is a race that's still tight, even though the public opinion polls are suggesting that Phillips has a lead. In a tight race, you know, this could matter to the few undecided swing voters who are out there, where if from a lot of their political information is coming from let's say advertising, you know, then it could matter, and it's probably important at some point for Dean Phillips to respond to it, much in the same way that I thought several weeks.
He's denounced it. I mean,
he's denounced it.
Yeah, he's been very clear on it.
Right.
So he's denounced it. I mean, that's fairly common in attack. What's different is these other people denouncing it.
Right. But still, going to your inside baseball issue, is unless Bill George and Peterson were willing to do a commercial to denounce it, it does sort of sound like inside baseball. And the parallel is getting, again, what I was trying to get to here, and Dean Phillips has denounced it, but a few weeks ago when, I can't remember if it was Paulson or the Republican Party came out with the criticism about Phillips and health insurance at his businesses, Phillips had to respond. I mean, at some point, if you're concerned about moving swing voters or affecting them in some way, you have to do something more than let's say simply denounce. You probably have to do something in terms of a political ad to respond to them.
Interesting.
So I do think this could matter. I also do think that again, Phillips and Peterson alone probably isn't enough. That would probably have to be incorporated.
You mean Bill George,
I'm sorry, say, would have to be sort of worked either into an ad if they were willing to do it, or something more prominent for it to have the impact. Otherwise, I think it is inside baseball. Now, the other thing I was going to say here, too, is that where I think we need to be thinking about, you know, the ad by Paulson also is in terms of, yes, that Phillips or Dean Phillips was on the board. But again, I'm speaking as a law professor who teaches among other things, you know, things like procedure, you know, civil procedure, and things like that. Is that you will routinely in suits like this, you will name, whether say the board of directors as respondents, but oftentimes. You do that for procedural purposes. So you sue Elena and the board of directors as the legal representatives. And a lot of times, the individual board members, A, they don't have personal liability, and B, a lot of times they have no idea what's going on de facto. You know, it's yes, they're legally responsible, but they are perhaps unaware of, let us say, a certain practice or something like that.
And that's what Mr. Phillips is saying. Mr. Phillips is saying that he didn't know about this. He didn't remember it at all.
Exactly.
And Mr. Congressman Paulson is saying, how could he not remember this or whatever? That's what Mr. Phillips is saying. You're saying that doesn't surprise you at all.
Right. From a legal point of view, I'm going to name the corporation as well as the board members. Maybe in some situations I name them in their individual capacity. I don't know if this suit was. But simply because you are the respondent doesn't necessarily mean that you were personally responsible or made any decisions. Now, let us say he were being sued because of specific actions that he had undertaken or failed to undertake, was negligent, or didn't do certain things in his individual capacity, that's a different story entirely. But here, I think partly where the lawsuit or where the Paulson ad may be unfair is the fact that it's saying because he was on the board and we've named the board as the respondent along with Elena, that means that that Phillips is personally responsible. That's a pretty significant stretch.
All right, and as you teach the civil process, and anyway, it's going to be interesting to see if that particular ad does have any impact or the controversy over it. I do think perhaps it is a little inside baseball, but I don't think this is going away. I think we haven't heard the last of this one, and it is interesting. There are two polls that have come out, both show Paulson trailing Dean Phillips, and that would be a big upset.
Yes.
If Dean Phillips can in fact pull this off, because it's pretty unusual to unseat an incumbent, especially an incumbent that has done as well in his reelection bids as Eric Paulson.
But you're absolutely correct that it would be pretty unusual, and this would be one of those seats that the Hill, the Cook Political Report, would list as saying significant bellwethers for the Democrats. If they win this one, this bodes exceedingly well for them in terms of their prospects of taking back the House of Representatives. The other thing that I find interesting about Paulson's ad here is that rarely do candidates themselves go this negative in the ads. Usually they want to distance themselves from the attack ads, and it's usually third-party groups, the political parties, the DCCC, the RCCC that do it. The fact that Paulson himself is actually, in his campaign, are actually doing this ads, highly, highly unusual also, and that speaks to the fact that, as you said here, he's trailing in the polls, and it may very well be that the internal polls for Paulson are suggesting perhaps even a bigger gap, and that's why he's going negative.
Right. So what Professor Schultz is saying is that this particular ad that we're talking about is one that's coming from his own campaign. It's not a third-party ad.
Right, and that's rare.
And to go that deeply negative with this kind of an attack that's been very controversial, you're saying that that is unusual, but it's definitely his ad that we're seeing.
Or that he opens up with him saying, I'm Eric Paulson, I stand behind this, then boom, go into it. Like I said, generally candidates, in many cases, they love those negative ads that a third party is doing, but they're not doing them, and that way, if it backfires, they can say, well, you know, I know it's negative, et cetera, but I'm not responsible for
right.
it.
It's a third party, and we don't have no control over them.
Exactly. Here, it's well within his control, and the potential for the backfire on this one, if he can't support those allegations, are far more significant than they are if a third party was doing this ad.
Okay. Well, listen, we have to take a quick break. There is so much to talk about, including the attorney general's race, some of the other congressional races. I do want to talk about the 8th Congressional District because I was up there this week. So keep it here, folks. More with David Schultz on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 8:26. That was a longer break. Chatting here with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. One of the other, and certainly there are so many negative ads out there. The one that where I really feel viewers are getting inundated, even in the Twin Cities market, is from the 8th Congressional District. Joe Radinovich, while there are some negative ads on the other side, Joe Radinovich, who was the Democratic nominee, is just getting hammered by these ads from outside groups. That race is one of the tightest in the country, apparently. The only polls that have been taken show a dead heat. Mr. Radinovich is the Democratic nominee. He's running against Pete Stauber, a former police lieutenant. And currently a county commissioner in St. Louis County. Your thoughts about the negative ads and the volume of them in that 8th Congressional District?
Well, again, the same thing. We're looking, partly why we're seeing so many ads to start with and so many negative ads is because races like that are so competitive and so close, and because we know, unfortunately, at least I'll say this, that negative ads work. They actually are effective in terms of moving some percentage of the population, both in terms of getting your base hot and bothered to come out and vote because you depict the other side as horrible, but it also can move undecided swing voters. But this is a race, this is a district that has actually swung back and forth between party control several times. It is a district that Donald Trump won 2 years ago. It is one that is open. All the criteria that we would think in terms of what would make a competitive congressional seat actually exists with this race. And we know for the last few years that incredible amounts of money have been spent there. So the negative ads up there are a sign of that it's one of those seats that both parties view as critical to control of the House of Representatives. But you're right, they are very, very negative, we're seeing there, and they are keying in on Radinovich's ranging anywhere from, parking tickets to a whole bunch of different things. And and again, we will see how effective they are. But again, this is a race that is, for all intents and purposes, dead even at this point. And I know when people are asking me, well, what are your predictions? This is one that I say, I just don't know.
Right. And certainly the last time around, it was about 2,000 votes. In fact, I was actually just looking it up. In the last four congressional elections, about to 2010, three of the four have been settled by less than 4,000 votes. Mm-hmm. So this is a squeaker here. And it really, I think absolutely it's too close to call. And in fact, it was one of the races that came in very, very late, or should I say early in the morning in 2016,
that's right,
showing that Rick Nolan had, in fact, just squeaked by over Stuart Mills. And I think it's one that's going to be that close again. And that's, you know, you sort of wonder, though, with all of these negative ads and the fact that these races have been so close up there, does the sheer volume of these ads, will it have an impact, or could it serve as perhaps suppressing the vote? Maybe people are just so sick of it all, they'll stay home.
Well, you actually hit at exactly the point that I want to make here, is what impact did the negative ads actually have? Again, first, there's sort of two goals with the negative ads. One, well, two or three goals. One is to paint a narrative about your opponent, or in this case, if you're a third party, about the person you don't like, and that way you force that person to have to respond. So first, it's to paint the person into a corner. Second, if you can describe that opponent as somebody being thoroughly horrible, hopefully you're hoping that your base will get excited to say, well, gosh, we can't let this terrible person get elected. But third, what we see is that these really negative attack ads do have a vote suppression of approximately, some estimates are, between 2 and 5%. I think it's probably closer to about 2 to 3%, where you get some voters who look at the attack ads on both sides, decide that they really don't want to vote whatsoever. And that becomes critical, because that voter suppression through this kind of negative attack ads, 2 or 3%, can be enough to shift the election from one person to another. So your intuition is absolutely correct. We do see correlations between significant attack ads and some voters, especially those more moderate centrist or let's say swing voters, opting to stay home on election day.
All right, we're chatting with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University. We do have to take a break, and we want to give you some weather. When we come back, we'll talk with Professor Schultz about some other key races, including the Attorney General's race. That's coming up on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 8:37 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with Professor David Schultz, so much to talk about. One of the big races that you've written about on your blog, and that we're going to discuss tonight, of course, is the Minnesota Attorney General's race. This is a hot one. One of the things that's going to happen this week is that Congressman Keith Ellison's divorce file will be unsealed. He was divorced a number of years ago from his wife of, I think, more than 20 years, Kim Ellison. And that's going to be an extraordinary event. And you also had an extraordinary development where you had apparently a recording of the Republican candidate, Doug Wardlow, saying that he would immediately fire all the Democrats in the office at the Attorney General's office. Your thoughts on this, because this is, once again, an extraordinary race with continuing to have extraordinary developments.
Well, first, let's think about the fact that rarely does an attorney general's race, especially in Minnesota, eclipse the governor's race. And to a large extent, the coverage of the AG's race is far exceeding the governor's race, and the amount of money that's being generated in the AG's race is extraordinary compared to what we normally see. So it's unusual. We have, in many ways, Wardlow versus Ellison representing two different visions of national politics. You know, Wardlow, effectively a Trump supporter, Ellison sort of like it on the Bernie Sanders Democratic left. So we have that playing out here. We have lots of interesting things, and just in terms of what makes that race so fascinating and so close. But one of the things I want to talk about first is the statement that Wardlow made that apparently was at a fundraiser, as you pointed out, that he said that if he were elected attorney general, he would immediately fire all the Democrats. Now, I know most of the focus has been on that statement of his in terms of whether or not it's inconsistent with a claim that he made that he said that he wouldn't act political as attorney general.
He said that, you know, many, many times.
That's right.
In his criticism of, you know, Congressman Ellison, who has said from the beginning and the get-go that he would use the attorney general's office, if elected, as a sort of a stopgap against policies of the Trump administration.
Exactly. So juxtaposing, what I did in my blog today is to say that whatever, however we construe that statement in terms of whether he's politicizing it or not, if he targets anybody in his office on the basis of their partisan affiliation or political views, that violates the First Amendment. And the law is pretty clear on this. And again, I speak as a constitutional law professor that there's a series of five Supreme Court cases that say that you may not fire people except in very small situations of where you've got senior policy people or you have people who are in very confidential relationships. You cannot say, I'm hiring you or firing you explicitly because you're a Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, et cetera, et cetera. That's a First Amendment violation. Now, could he lay off people or fire people because of, for example, that of their performance? Yes. Could he say that we don't want certain people in our office because of legal skills, et cetera, et cetera? But he may not target people based upon their partisanship. And if that were to happen, we would see the Attorney General's office sued. And what I talk about in my blog is a potentially not unusual circumstance. If he were to get, or actually a potentially very interesting circumstance here, if he were to get elected, and let us say Tim Walz were to be elected as governor, let's say Wardlow fires a bunch of people because they're Democrats, they sue the Attorney General's office, they then also name the state of Minnesota. Generally, the Attorney General is supposed to represent the state of Minnesota. What if now the governor's office says, no, we don't agree? You would get into a major fight that would perhaps involve hiring outside counsel by the governor to sue the Attorney General, costing taxpayers money. Plus, you would have some significant legal conflict of interest issues. But the core point that I wanted to make here is that it is unconstitutional to target people in the public sector based upon their political views.
Right. And, you know, there have been accusations certainly against Lori Swanson about her getting attorneys to do work on her campaigns on the taxpayer's dime.
Right.
And that is problematic and certainly a source of extraordinary criticism against her. I think it's something that hurt her, obviously, in her failed bid to run for governor.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And I think that was one of those criticisms came out right before the primary, and I think that hurt her pretty dramatically. And it's absolutely correct also that the courts have said that you may not expend public dollars or use public resources for partisan political purposes. Now, there's a fine line here. Let us say, for example, an attorney general is running for office on saying they're going to sue certain kind of companies, if elected. I'll back it up and say, what if, let's say, for example, the Attorney General is legitimately looking at some type of business on, let's say, insurance or consumer fraud or something like that, and they're doing legal research in terms of how to prosecute this business. That's perfectly okay. It's also perfectly okay for the Attorney General to say that if reelected, you know, I'm going to go after these kind of businesses. And so sometimes the fine line between political or partisan activity and legitimate legal work is hard to sort of draw the line. But if the purpose of the research that you're doing, of the work that you're being asked to do, is for partisan purposes, that, too, is also a violation of the First Amendment.
Right. And also, you know, it's how do you determine who's a Democrat and who's a Republican? I mean, it's not, you know, in some states, when you register to vote and you vote, you have to declare your party affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case here in Minnesota.
Correct. Now, states like New York, where I'm from, you have to do that. Many other states have that. But also I was going to say is, again, speaking as somebody who's a lawyer and a law professor, and I know lots of people who work in government, the AG's office, for lots of those individuals there, they really do significantly suppress or keep hidden as much as possible their partisan affiliation and do a pretty good job of bracketing them off. Again, I do training for the judicial branch. I've done ethics training for the Attorney General's office. And these are conversations that we have in terms of sort of permissible lines of where you can go and not go, on top of which also there are significant legal ethics issues here that you can face sanctions for crossing some of these lines.
All right. We do have to take another quick break. When we come back, I do want to ask you about the release of Keith Ellison's divorce record, something that both he and his ex-wife did not want released. That is going to happen apparently on Tuesday. I want to get your take on that. So keep it here, News Radio 830 WCCO. It's 8:49 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with David Schultz, for a few more minutes. Later this week, or on Tuesday, I believe, Congressman Keith Ellison's divorce file will be unsealed. This is something that both he and his ex-wife Kim Ellison have opposed. The media asked for, I think, the Star Tribune and some media outlets sued to get this opened. In the aftermath of Congressman Ellison being accused by his former girlfriend of dragging her off a bed and being emotionally and physically abusive, what do you make of this? I mean, is it pretty unusual to have a divorce file unsealed?
No, it's actually incredibly unusual to have it sealed. I've done about 100 divorces in my life for representing clients. I've been only able to get one file sealed in my entire career, and it involved a situation where I was representing a client whose husband tried to kill her. The scar tissue was above her heart, and we convinced the judge to say that in the interest of saving her and protecting her life, we want to seal the record, and the judge said yes. And so it's incredibly unusual, and what probably most listeners don't realize is that with the exception of something such as, let's say, Social Security numbers and a few other things like that, all of your divorce records that you file in court, your financial stuff, it's all filed, that's all public information. And the reason why it's public information, it's under the First Amendment, is to make sure that, you know, that the public or the press can inspect it to make sure the courts aren't doing anything nefarious or wrong. So it's the whole idea of open courts in the United States. So, A, it's just incredibly unusual to be able to have a sealed record, and therefore it didn't surprise me whatsoever that the Star Tribune, and I think it was Alpha News, that was going to get it unsealed. Now, having said that, is anybody going to find anything? I have no idea, but I can also again say, and maybe some of your listeners have gone through a divorce and they know this, that oftentimes there are there's acrimony, there's anger, there's some shouting, you know, all kinds of stuff that goes on, and I suspect someone's going to find something in that file that may be, whether it's real or misconstrued. And I know part of what Ellison asked for is to say, well, we wanted to keep closed because the information in there may be what, misused, you know, by somebody. That's no reason to keep it closed. So the upshot is we don't know what we're going to find, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's something unflattering. Because almost in every divorce,
There's something unflattering,
especially at the end. Again, and some listeners out there may know what I'm referring to, is that you get to the end of a marriage, and people don't always get along. There's shouting, there's fights, et cetera, et cetera. They're not pretty.
Right. And I think that's, well, it remains to be seen. And obviously, you know, we certainly will be reporting on it because it will be a public record. The comments that Mr. Wardlow made that we were referring to earlier, where he was made at a very big public gathering, I believe it was a fundraiser for Jason Lewis, in which he said he'd fire all the Democrats in the AG's office if elected. Is that something, I mean, talked about inside baseball earlier at the top of this hour with this controversial ad that Congressman Paulson's running in the 3rd District. Is that something that's inside baseball? I mean, how much are people paying attention? Because there's so much out there in all these races.
Yeah, I think it's going to be also inside baseball because, again, I think we're at a point right now where it's almost like saturation bombing in terms of all the ads that are out there, and that I think sort of sorting through some of these intricacies there, I think, are going to be very difficult for most people. I think we're probably down now to, 3 weeks to go? We're down to probably very small percentages of the population that have not made up their mind in Minnesota who they're going to vote for in a whole bunch of different races. And I just think that, like, the release on Tuesday with Keith Ellison's divorce records, again, it could be decisive, something like that. It could be decisive in terms of the fact that there's some undecided voters out there that could move them. Wardlow's statement could be, but it's hard to figure out at this point where all this information is coming here, how for so many people who are just, I think, starting to get a little turned off now by the ads. And I don't know about you, I have people talking to me all the time saying, aren't you sick of the ads? Aren't you turned off by them? You're probably hearing the same thing,
absolutely,
too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. People, I think, people are now at the point where they're zoning them out. They've heard them. Even if they're undecided, I'm not sure if any more information is really going to help them make up their minds. They're already digesting what they're hearing and are at a point where they're going to try to figure out what to do.
I think what I'm hearing a lot of is, I think people don't quite understand, it's rare to see this volume of ads for congressional races, mm-hmm. because if you live in St. Paul, you're not going to be voting in the 3rd congressional mm-hmm. district, or you're certainly not going to be voting in the 8th congressional district. And I think that's what people are having a hard time with, just being bombarded by all of these ads for races that they won't get a chance to vote on, because in these congressional races, they each congressman represents 700,000 people, but they're saturating the Twin Cities market for all of these different races, and that's really unusual.
It's unusual, and I think it confuses some people because
absolutely.
I gave a talk today, and I had some people who said that, well, I'm seeing all these Paulson ads. I thought Betty, this was in St. Paul, they said, I thought Betty McCollum was my representative.
And she
said,
is.
she is. And I said, I was trying to explain to her exactly this concept here, is that it is unusual to see, especially in Minnesota, these congressional ads, because they're paying to reach millions of more people than their own congressional district. But because there's so much money being poured in, because these races are so competitive, that's why we're seeing all these ads. I think we did an interview for CCO Television a few weeks ago, and I think my line was to you, why are we seeing so many ads? When you asked me, I said, because we've turned into Ohio. We've turned into a very competitive state, at least for these 4 congressional races.
But that's interesting. An interesting point that you make, that people are confused. I mean, not only oversaturated, but they're actually confused about what they'll have a chance to vote on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, Professor David Schultz, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure.
Same here, and good luck on your show in the morning.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, sir. Yes, please tune in to the new Politics Show, 10:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. It'll be Pat Kessler and myself going over so many of these topics and so many of these races. There is so much going on. We're going to break it down, and there'll be probably something new tomorrow morning. There's something new just about every morning. So please tune in, WCCO Television. I'll also be on at 6 a.m. as well. All right, folks, I do want to thank David Josephson, the producer of this show. A big shout out to Jonathan Lowe for helping. We had to switch up our order a little bit and get a different guest in. So thank you so much for that. Also want to thank Shaletta Brundage, another one of our producers here. So keep it here, folks. News Radio 830 WCCO.